al sur.
Short-term rentals during the summer. It is an attempt to address the shortage of affordable housing. Rentals through sites like Airbnb will only be allowed to operate from June to September. During the off-season, Montreal will only permit short-term leases for registered units within a small zone. The city said that over half of available short-term rental units are illegal. Therefore, these changes will enable the availability of roughly 2,000 units for long-term renters. On Tuesday, March 18th, two NASA astronauts who spent 9 months on the International Space Station finally returned to Earth. Astronauts Butch Wilmore and Suni Williams arrived back in their SpaceX capsule, which made a gentle splashdown off the coast of Florida. In June 2024, Wilmore and Williams were sent on a mission that was only meant to last 8 days. However, the spacecraft they used to travel to the ISS, called the Starliner, suffered technical issues. They had to wait until the SpaceX's crew completed its mission before returning to Earth, causing the dramatic extension of their trip. Wilmore and Williams will be taken to the Johnson Space Center in Texas, where they will be checked by medical experts for any health concerns. Early Tuesday morning, Israel launched an extensive series of airstrikes across Gaza during the early hours of the morning, breaching once again the two-month ceasefire that began on January 19. Palestinian health authorities reported that over 400 people were killed in the strikes, including more than 180 children. At least 600 were also injured. This comes as Israel continues to cut electricity and blockade aid from entering the besieged enclave. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu released an announcement declaring the resumption of Israel's bombing campaign in Gaza. Israel justified the attacks by saying it is forcing Hamas to release the captives. It also claimed that Hamas was rearming and planning a new attack. Netanyahu said that Tuesday's airstrikes were only the beginning, and that Israel will continue its attacks until it destroys Hamas and frees all the captives. For more, go to cjlo.com/news or follow CJLO News on Spotify.
We get to feel small.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live here on CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal. My name is Tommy Lane, and this is the Tommy John Show, where every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, we break down everything going on in the world of sports. Hope everyone's doing well. Was not expecting this weather today with the snow and the slush on the ground. I thought we were past it. Thought it was gone. Nope. One more snowfall before it's officially great weather. We had it, and then today's a little reminder. We still live in Canada, and once in a while in March and April, it will snow. But, man, what a week we had. I'm, like, out of breath because of the insanity of March Madness, Major League Baseball starting this week, just crazy games in the NHL and the NBA. Remember, folks, we are less than a month away. Right around, it's 3 and a bit weeks away from the NHL and the NBA playoffs, so we'll get into that, obviously. We have to recap some of the madness. We had upsets like crazy. Then we had the big dogs like Duke and Auburn and Florida getting through to the next round. But then you still have the Cinderella stories, which are still lurking, so we'll get into all of that over the next hour here on the Tommy John Show, and we will preview a bit of the Major League Baseball season, because opening day is Thursday. I know they had the two games in Japan for the Tokyo series. Okay, fair enough. But when everyone plays, that's still opening day. They do the Ohtani show in Tokyo a week before the season starts. They need to get the Dodgers back and the Cubs back, get them into a routine. So technically, yes, those were regular season games, but we are ready to roll now. We are ready to roll. That's out of the way. Baseball's back. So we'll look deeply at the American League East because we are in Montreal. People love the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Blue Jays here more than any other. And also, we'll just quickly start on baseball. We know what the Dodgers are going to do. They just won the World Series, and they added just all-stars everywhere. They added Blake Snell. They added the kid Sasaki, who was a phenom from Japan. So this is 2 years in a row where the Dodgers have grabbed the Japanese phenom at pitching. Last year was Yamamoto, and they gave him, without even throwing a pitch in the major leagues, not even throwing a pitch yet, he got over a $300 million deal. Sasaki gets that nice deal as well. He was linked to the Cubs, linked to the Giants. He was even linked to the Red Sox for a little bit. He ends up going to the Dodgers. No surprise there. The Dodgers are by far the best team. Ohtani, Mookie Betts, Freeman, we get it. Okay, Teoscar Hernandez, they're loaded. The Dodgers are loaded. They're most likely going to win the National League, but you never know in a three or best of five, best of seven series. You never know. But regular season, we like to think, hey, they're going to win the West. And then what's really interesting in the National League is, what is San Diego going to do? Are they going to be a wild card team? And then the Central's up for grabs, and the National League East will be fireworks, because you always have the Braves, who will be good, and they're just an elite team. The Phillies are going to be good. They're an elite team. And then there's a team in New York, not named the Yankees, who had a fantastic run last year that added the best free agent on the market in Juan Soto. So the Mets are going to be fun to watch. The Braves are always fun to watch. And then you got the Phillies, who are still pretty fun to watch as well. So that's where I'm looking at the National League. We know the West. Hey, San Diego, can they compete with LA? I liked what the Diamondbacks did in free agency as well. I think we get two teams out of there. The Giants are a big question mark. We don't know. The Central's up for grabs, but you look at it, the Reds probably won't do anything. The Pirates, yeah, they have Paul Skeens, but they're not expected to do much. The Cardinals are in a slump. To me, it's between Milwaukee and the Cubs. The Cubs went and got Tucker in the offseason. Yes, they lost Bellinger, but Tucker's a great bat. I like the Cubs. I know they lost those two games over in Tokyo, but hey, we understand that. I think it comes down to the Cubs and the Brewers, and the Brewers lost a ton of players in free agency as well. We got to remember that. So the Central's a bit up for grabs. It's those three teams in the East. And then who is going to be wild cards in the National League West? Because it looks like the Dodgers, they're going to be 105 to 111, 12 win team. You go to the American League, and I'm trying to be kind when I'm saying this. None of the teams look great. None of that. Like, the American League West, the Astros on experience, but they lost Bregman. They lost Tucker. They're not the same baseball team. But the Texas Rangers, okay, maybe DeGrom comes back. He won a World Series a few years ago. Okay, maybe. But outside of that, I mean, the Angels, no. The Athletics, I mean, they were better. They're better this year than they were last year, but they're nothing great. The Mariners, I mean, every time we want to put the Mariners in that wild card race, they shoot themselves in the foot. So I don't know what the hell is going to happen out west. The Central is even more of a disaster. The White Sox were the worst team of all time last year. You think I'm lying? They had the most losses ever in a season. Then the Twins, who no one knows about. The Guardians were good last year. We'll see if it happens again. And then it's the interesting story of, is it Detroit or Kansas City? Now, the divisions will be exciting to see who wins them. But if you look at the National League, there's no team, the American League has no team like the Dodgers, no team like the Phillies, no team like the Braves, no team even like the Mets or the Padres. There's just the high-end talent in the National League is unbelievable. The American League, it's all kind of bunched together. We will quickly go more in-depth with the American League East because that's where everyone's interested. So you have the Yankees, obviously, made to the World Series last year. And they lost in five games to the Dodgers. You have the Red Sox who made a whole bunch of moves. The Blue Jays, who the hell knows? They did bring in Santander, who's a good bat. He had 44 homers last year. So, okay, he's a good player. The Rays don't have a stadium right now. They're playing at the Yankees AAA affiliate stadium or their spring training ground, whatever the hell it is. I think it's the spring training ground. And then you have the Orioles, who have some unbelievable homegrown talent, but they never seem to address the pitching in the offseason. It killed them last year. It'll probably kill them again this year. So the American League East is up for grabs. So we'll quickly look at all of them here before we get into the NHL and the NBA, because opening day, we have to do it. And we will talk about baseball each week here, but it's a long season. Teams are going to have ups, downs. You're going to see a team get off to a good start that no one thought. And then once we get into the dog days, July, August, and they completely fall off. So here we go. We'll quickly look at it. So we'll start off with who I think will win the American League East. And I'm not trying to be a homer. I'm not trying to be someone who's completely biased. But I do follow them the most, and it's the Boston Red Sox. I think the Red Sox, due to injuries to the Yankees, will win the American League East. And that's just my gut feeling. So they had a solid pitching staff last year. That was the saving grace. They added Walker Buehler, who's won a couple World Series and was phenomenal late in the year. It's a one-year prove-it deal. I think he'll pitch well. They went and traded for Garrett Crochet from the White Sox, who's a true number one ace. He will be the Red Sox number one. With Tanner Houck there and Bayo and Crawford. Remember, Giolito, he was the big free agent signing last year. He blew out his arm. He's back this year. So the Red Sox are going to have a very good starting staff. They added Aroldis Chapman, which I don't love. He's not the Aroldis Chapman of a few years ago, but he's not bad for the bullpen. They're going to have a very strong pitching staff. And while the team was talented, they had Devers, they had Duran, they had all Yoshida, they had all these great left-handed bats. They didn't truly have a good right-handed bat in the lineup. And then right before spring training, they give Bregman the big deal. They paid a lot for him, but he's a great fielder and a great hitter. He's won World Series in Houston. He's going to fit in perfectly into that Red Sox lineup. He's a great right-handed bat. Championship experience. Love the pickup for the Red Sox. So right now, I would favor the Red Sox. Not to mention, they have the number one prospect pool in baseball. They just announced that Christian Campbell, he's going to be on the opening day roster. He's one of the, I think he was ranked 7th best prospect in all of baseball. Not to mention, the Red Sox have the number one prospect in all of baseball in outfielder Roman Anthony. They have Marcelo Meyer, who's supposed to be called up as well, which is another top 10 prospect. So these guys are all going to help. And we'll see if Vaughn Grisham, who they got, who they traded Chris Sale away for, who ended up winning the Cy Young, and that wasn't a great deal. But he's this young, good player. Let's see what happens. He'll start the year in the minors. Maybe he'll make a run to the big league squad and help out once he gets there. Love Alex Cora as a manager. The American League East is wide open. So right now, I'm going to pick the Red Sox. And the only reason picking them over the Yankees is not just for my hatred for the Yankees. The Yankees just got destroyed with injuries prior to the season. Garrett Cole, Tommy John surgery, he's out. Stanton, something's going on with his elbow. I don't know if it's tendonitis or something. He's out indefinitely. Then they have Lewis Heel, who was phenomenal for them last year, pitcher. He's going to be out a long time. So now they're going to start Will Warren, I believe is his name, on opening day. He's a young kid. We don't know what he's going to be. Now, he could be great. Who knows? But that's what they're doing now in the pitching staff. I know they gave Max Fried a boatload of money. I understand that. He was great with the Braves. But he's had injury issues in the past, and he's a very good pitcher when healthy. And if the Yankees were healthy, they'd be the runaway favorites to win the American League again and be in the World Series. But injuries killed them. And here they are. They lost Juan Soto, not to mention, you know, they wanted to bring him back. They offered him well over $700 million. The Mets and Steve Cohen just went nuts and paid for him. They lost Nestor Cortez to Milwaukee. They lost Clay Holmes of the Mets, who's a good, two good pitchers. And then Gleyber Torres, all right, he's not who he used to be. He goes to the Tigers. And would they replace him with? Yes, they brought in Bellinger, who's going to be a good outfielder. Paul Goldschmidt, I mean, if this is 2015, 2013, okay, that's a hell of a pickup. But he's older now. He's not the player he once was. He'll be playing for them. And the big, big question mark for them is what Josh Chisholm are they going to get? They acquired him halfway through the year from Miami. He immediately gave him a spark, but he cooled off in the postseason. Now he had his first full offseason in pinstripes. He's going to be a starter for them. They still have Judge, okay. Fair enough, but I don't know. Right now, I have them second. They still have good pitchers, but those big losses in the offseason, I know they acquired people, but I think the injuries and the loss of key players in the offseason knocked the Yankees down the second. I think they're a wild card team, but right now, I look at Boston. They're healthy. They have depth. They don't just have star players. You look down that roster, like we mentioned, they have young kids who are ready to play baseball now that can help out. Number three is the Baltimore Orioles. We'll quickly get on them. Listen, Brandon Hyde's a great manager. You understand that. But they just need to address pitching. It has killed them year after year come October. It's just, they have great young hitters. They have Rutschman. They have Gunnar Henderson. They have Jackson Holliday. They have Colter Cowser. Okay, you got great hitters. They're all homegrown talent. They'll be here a while. Great. But look at that pitching staff. It's decent, but it's not great. Getting Bautista back in the bullpen will help. But come on, it's not a great. Losing Corbin Burns was a huge loss. It was. He goes to Arizona. They needed him to stick around. I don't know how the money worked out. Just couldn't come to a deal. He goes off to Arizona. And now that pitching staff is really, really hurting at the top of the rotation. They brought in Tyler O'Neill. He was great for the Red Sox last year. Gary Sanchez from Milwaukee. We'll see. And Charlie Morton, but he's 41 years old. Again, you know, he's not the player he once was. So it's going to be interesting to see with Baltimore. They're going to score runs. But we know come October, come September, when those would come the playoffs, then you need good pitching if you want to win a World Series. And right now, the Orioles don't have that. They don't. They have the elite hitting talent, young hitting talent. They just need to address that pitching. Now, if we get to the trade deadline, they go out and make some moves, okay. But I was stunned they didn't go after Blake Snell, stunned they didn't try and offer the Sasaki kid more, because they got the new owner there who said he's going to pay, he wants to make the Orioles great. Okay, well, you had two great pitching prospects on proven commodities at the pitching position, and the Orioles didn't do anything. In fact, they got worse. So that's going to be interesting to see if you're Baltimore. So right now, I have the Red Sox 1, I have the Yankees 2, I have the Orioles 3, number 4, I have the Blue Jays. And the Blue Jays could easily be number 1 if they hit their true potential. But the problem is they never do. They're the biggest I don't know team in baseball by a mile. They have two huge scenarios that will be hanging over them the whole year. Two huge ones. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. leaving's one. Bo Bichette's leaving too. They kicked the can down the road, down the road, down the road. And now it's time to pay them. And I know Bichette was awful last year, but I've been hearing that he's going to have a great year, MVP type like year. He's fully healthy. Okay, let's see. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr., listen, last year he was phenomenal. He was the lone bright spot for the Blue Jays. They needed to get that deal done. I don't care how much it costs. The Blue Jays are in a position where they want to get big free agents, but they never get them. But now you finally have a big free agent who you drafted, who you groomed, who you brought up to be an all-star level first baseman, probably one of the best first basemen in the sport, if not the best first baseman in the sport. And you don't want to pay him. So that's a bit strange. And you look at the crowd at Blue Jays games at Rogers Center, it is all 27 jerseys. A few 11s for Bichette, but they're all 27 Guerrero jerseys. He is a superstar in the city. I hope they get the deal done, but they have to wait to the end of the year. And then the same with Bichette. So that will be hanging over those two guys the whole year long. I think they'll play well. You know Guerrero is going to play well. He wants that big, big contract. I assume Bo will play much better this year. So that will help the team in the short term. But that's there. The Ross Atkins and Shapiro and that management will be thinking about it throughout the year if these guys are putting up all-star numbers. They added Santander from the Orioles. He's a good switch-hitting bat. He hits for power. He had, 40-something home runs last year. They have a very good rotation. Let's be honest. Gausman's a great pitcher. Berrios was great early in the year last year. Chris Bassett looked phenomenal in spring training. And then they have the Bowden Francis kid who was, I mean, as bad as it was late in the year last year, you looked at Bowden Francis, you're like, damn, this guy could be a number one pitcher. So he'll be in the rotation. They got a very solid starting rotation. The bullpen would worry me. They added Max Scherzer to maybe be a starter. So if they go Gausman, Berrios, Bassett, Francis, Scherzer, I know he's in his 40s, but that's a pretty good rotation. But that bullpen would be very concerning. Late in games, we've seen it a bunch with the Blue Jays where late in games they just blow it because the rotation, the bullpen's not as good. So that would be interesting to see. They added Andrés Giménez, remember, from Cleveland. He's a phenomenal defender, but his batting average has been woeful the last few years. So they're very talented, Toronto. But I don't trust him. I don't trust the manager at all, John Schneider. He freaks me out. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Blue Jays do. They have the talent to win this division, no question. They still got Springer there. They added Santander, Guerrero, Varsho, Bichette. They got talented all-star caliber players. Great rotation, but we'll see. I mean, every year, I have to hear from experts, this is the Blue Jays' year. And I'm rooting for them, apart from the Red Sox. I want a Canadian team to do well. It's just not looking good right now for the Blue Jays. So I have them fourth just because I don't trust them. I don't. Them and Baltimore went back and forth on, but Baltimore has at least made the postseason the last 2 years. The Blue Jays last year were appalling. That's why I went Baltimore over Toronto, but you could easily flip those. Number five, I think, is the Tampa Bay Rays, and it's just been a disastrous of an offseason for the Rays. It's a mess, absolute mess. The field gets destroyed because of the Hurricane Tropicana Field. They're playing where the Yankees play their spring training. The stadium deal for the new stadium gets scrapped. It looks like the Rays are out of town. Please come to Montreal. I'm going to start that trend. But anyway, you have cities like Montreal, like Nashville, Charlotte, teams wanting, Salt Lake City, teams wanting a baseball team. And we know we're going to get two expansion teams once this Tampa thing is sorted out. But it looks like we're coming to the end of Tampa Bay being a baseball team. I could be wrong on that. Maybe they sell the team to a local owner. But they don't draw well. They really don't draw well, and it's just a huge problem. It's been hanging over the franchise for a while now, and I think that will translate to the field because their pitching staff's good, but they cannot score runs at all, if we quickly segue into the baseball part of it. They were last year in OPS and run scores. They cannot score. They need Yandy Diaz, who's the 2023 batting champion. He was hitting well over 330. He needs to pick it up. Brandon Lowe and Josh Lowe, these are veteran bats. They need them to produce for the Rays because outside of that, they're not going to get runs. They're not. Like, I don't know where the runs are going to come from. Outside from those three guys, maybe there's some young prospects they're pulling up. I'm not sure. But they got a good pitching staff. It was thank God that Shane McClanahan, he's not out for the year. He's only starting the year on the injured list, so he will be healthy. That's a big break for the Rays. I like Drew Rasmussen. Shane Baz is good. Taj Bradley. Not to mention that Pete Fairbanks, 23 saves last year for the Rays. He's a phenomenal pitcher in the coming out of the bullpen. The big problem is they can't score the runs. And I know they brought in Chris Morel from the Cubs. He had 26 homers a few years ago. Okay, that's not a bad move. But right now, the Rays are really a question mark when it comes to offense. I don't know where it's going to come from. You think Diaz, you think the two lows. But hey, it could be anyone. Or it could be no one, and I'm leaning no one right now. They're playing in, I don't know how inspired the team's going to be. They're playing in a spring training field. It's just not a good time to be a Tampa Bay Rays fan. A few years ago, they were in the World Series right there. They cleaned house. I know their prospect pool is getting a bit better. But for 2025 and 2026, I don't know about the Tampa Bay Rays. And yes, maybe they'll get on good runs and win some games here and there. That's the way the Major League Baseball season goes. But right now, I would put them last in the American League East. I would. So just quickly to run through it, I go Red Sox 1, Yankees 2, Orioles just ahead of the Blue Jays 3, Blue Jays 4, Rays 5. Quick into the Central, I'll just say the Royals win it. I do like the Tigers. It was a great story at the end of last year. Them making the postseason, winning a round. I like the Tigers as well. The Guardians, we'll see if they can replicate that this year. I'll lean Kansas City to win that division. Out West, listen, could be anyone. I'll pick Houston just because why not? They're Houston Astros, and they always find a way. Out East, National League, quickly, I'll go Phillies 1, Braves 2, Mets 3. I think they all make the postseason, but that's such a tough division. They're just going to beat up on the Nationals and the Marlins. Those three teams should be in the postseason. The Central, I'll go the Cubs. I thought the Brewers need to do more in the offseason. They let some big free agents go. Okay, let's bring it back. Nope. Sorry, not happening. The Cubs go out. They go get Tucker. They go make other moves. I think the Cubs win the Central. The Brewers finish second. National League West, come on. It's the Dodgers and everyone else. Do like Arizona a lot, and I like the Padres. I think the playoff teams, oh, it's going to be tough. It's going to be very tough. I think the Padres have a good chance. I think the Diamondbacks have a great chance. And then the two other teams outside of the Phillies, the Braves and the Mets, have a very good chance. That's going to be the hunt down the stretch. Don't talk to me about the Pirates, the Reds, the Cardinals, the Rockies, the Giants. No, not having it. The Marlins. No. Mets, Braves, Brewers, Padres, Diamondbacks. They're all going to be competing for those wildcard spots. That's really what it's going to come down to. And we'll see what happens. We will see what happens. I cannot wait. Opening day on Thursday. And what's great about baseball, it will just be there the whole year until the NFL and the NHL pick up again in the fall, which is fantastic. So that was a quick little baseball breakdown of the American League East, where the Blue Jays stand, and they have a good chance if they play well. They have the talent. It's not like the Rays, who if they play well, maybe they'll win 75, 80 games. No, the Blue Jays play well. They could win the division. Like, they have the talent to do that. But they haven't done it in years past, and I really don't trust the manager Schneider. I don't trust him at all. I remember those pulling Berrios in the big playoff game a few years ago against Minnesota last year, just being awful with his pitching management. I don't trust him. I really don't trust him, and that he's too into analytics for my liking. I'm not a big fan of Schneider as a manager. I'm not. So that was the quick baseball breakdown. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the NHL. And my goodness, what a game that was Saturday between Montreal and Colorado. We will get into that, as well as talking about the National Basketball Association, the Cleveland Cavaliers. The once dominant Cleveland Cavaliers are 6-4 in their last 10 and lost 4 in a row prior to Sunday. So we'll get into what's happening with the Cavs as well here on the Tommy John Show. Do not go away. We'll be right back after this quick ad on the Tommy John Show. We'll speak to you guys right after the break.
CJLO is putting on a show. On Friday, April 4th, join us at Maison Montreal for a show celebrating our brand new folk music programming month, New Roots. With sets by local artists Girl With Dream, Hanako, and Holly McLaughlin, you won't want to miss this night of intimate singer-songwriter performances. Tickets are on sale now. For more information, check out CJLO on Instagram at CJLOMTL and at CJLO.com.
For the best new music from around the globe, with a respectful nod to the musical pioneers of the past and a whole lot more, join me, Danny Payne, on The Pressure Drop every Monday at 5 on CJLO 1690 AM or CJLO.com.
Back here in Tommy John Show. So we'll quickly get into a few of these March Madness scores before I forget. What a weekend that was. Man, was that Florida UConn game was phenomenal. UConn had Florida the one seed on the ropes. Just some big shots down the stretch by Florida. That Walter Clayton kid, man, he was phenomenal. Just hitting clutch three after clutch three. And the Gators move on. They win that one in a thriller. 77 to, was it 74? 75. 77 to 75. Then Cooper Flagg and Duke annihilated Baylor. Kentucky beats Illinois. They move on. Alabama beats St. Mary's. Maryland at the buzzer take down Colorado State. What a phenomenal game that was. Ole Miss dismantling Iowa State. Arizona over Oregon. Michigan State over New Mexico. That was a great game as well. And we head to the Saturday slate. Purdue over McNeese State. The big shocker, Arkansas taking down two seed St. John's. Michigan over Texas A&M. Texas Tech over Drake. Auburn over Creighton. BYU over Wisconsin, a surprising one. Houston just get past Gonzaga. UCLA fall to Tennessee. So the two seed moves on there. The big upset of the tournament for sure was McNeese State taking down was it Clemson? Then they just didn't have enough gas over the weekend. But here we are. We're down to the Sweet 16. It's BYU and Alabama on Thursday. That should be a good one. Maryland, Florida, Arizona, Duke, Arkansas, Texas Tech. Then you get to the Friday matches. Ole Miss, Michigan State. The big one I'm looking forward to is Friday at 7:30. Kentucky and Tennessee. Then after that, Michigan and Auburn. And then the night game on Friday, Purdue and Houston, all looking for spots in the Elite Eight. And then, if you think about it, we're a week away from the Final Four. So it's going to be crazy. Right now, I picked Florida to start the tournament. I'm going to stick with Florida. They really had no business. I thought UConn were the better team, had a better game plan. But down the stretch, Florida made everything. And they move on to the next round. But they do got their hands full. Maryland, listen, I know it wasn't pretty against Colorado State, and they're going to be outgunned against Florida, but you never know what a win like that does to you. It either keeps you rattled, you're not focused on the next game, you're on the high of winning in such a dramatic way, and you're not ready to go. Or you say, hey, listen, guys, that was Colorado State. We got Florida coming up. So we got it. We better button things up. So it could go one of two ways for Maryland. So that's going to be a good one. And I really am looking forward to Kentucky and Tennessee. I have Tennessee going to the national championship. I just had a gut feeling. But we'll see. Kentucky, you know, it's a blue chip program, has been there. And then how about St. John's? That was a tough one, losing to Calipari in Arkansas. But still a great year for St. John's. Great year. Patino looks like he's going to stay on, so they're going to be the favorites in the Big East again next year. Great, great season for St. John's, but just falls short in that one against Arkansas. Quickly over in the NHL. So it was a gong show of a weekend in the NHL. You had the Leafs being up 2-0 on Nashville. And I don't know what the hell that was late in the game. Nashville just came on like crazy and stole that one from Toronto. Was it 5-2? They just really took the game over after that. Then we had the crazy game in New Jersey with Ottawa. Ottawa's crazy. It's just some nights they totally outplay teams and they lose. And then you have games where they have no business winning. They have like 18 or 17 shots on net. And they win the game because Ullmark stood on his head. That was similar the other night against New Jersey. I thought New Jersey had more of the puck. They were in the zone. They were firing shots on net. And Ullmark was great. It's similar to that Detroit game a few weeks ago. I know it wasn't, 48 or 47 saves, whatever Ullmark had. But he was great in the hockey game. There's that crazy chance at the buzzer that didn't go for New Jersey. And Ottawa, they're just plugging away right now. They had, they're 7-2-1 in their last 10. 7-2-1. They got a bit of breathing room right now as the first wild card team. Like, they're on 79 points. Montreal's on 75. So it's not a 10-point lead. But still, right now, with 13 games to go, a 4-point lead, you'd take that if you're Ottawa right now. And they got big games coming up. Big, big games coming up for the Senators. They got Buffalo, who you got to beat. And then, listen to this. They got Detroit, who's trying to catch them. And they got Columbus, who's trying to catch them. So this is a big week for the Senators. At Buffalo, at Detroit, home against Columbus. So if they win those three games, I think they're in a great spot. I really am. Then Montreal, who are dead in the water, down 3-0 and 4-1. Battle back, played phenomenal. Had Colorado on their heels in the third period. They score three goals to tie it. then losing a shootout to Colorado. But still, it's two losses in a row for Montreal, but they got points in both of them. So it's not the end of the world. They need to have a good road trip here coming up. They got a four-game road trip at St. Louis, who are playing great hockey under Jim Montgomery, at Philadelphia, which they should win that one. Then they got the two big boys at Carolina and at Florida. So these are four big games coming up for Montreal. You need to win two of them, in my opinion. And I think you're circling Philadelphia as one of them, and then pick your poison on the other. If Montreal can get 4 out of 8 points here, and then you head into that backstretch, and you've got some brutal teams. And I'm going to count the Bruins as brutal right now. You have Florida again. Okay, the Bruins stink. Philly stink. Nashville stink. Detroit, meh. Chicago stink. There's winnable games there for Montreal. And if you can get through that stretch 2-2, maybe take a point from the Carolina game or the Florida game. They've played Florida well, so they might like their chances in that one. But this is a huge road trip coming up, and it starts tomorrow, 8 o'clock at St. Louis, who are 8-1-1 in their last 10, have won 6 in a row, and I'm kicking myself as a Bruins fan. I didn't want Montgomery to go in the first place. I just thought the team was poorly constructive. I would have let Sweeney and Cam Neely go before Jim Montgomery. Fair enough. They didn't get to a deal on a contract, so they fire him. All right. And look what he's done with St. Louis. 6 in a row, and they have just completely hurdled Vancouver and Calgary. It was Vancouver-Calgary, Vancouver-Calgary, Vancouver-Calgary. Well, the Blues have won 6 in a row and have taken, what, they're 8-1-1 in their last 10. So they've gotten points in 9 of their last 10 games, 8 of them being wins, and they are on 81 points. The Flames are on 77 points. And I know they have 3 games in hand, Calgary, but if you don't win those games, like I said last week, they're irrelevant. Seattle, they got to win, Calgary. Dallas, and then Edmonton, and then Colorado, and then Utah. These are not easy games coming up for the Flames. And I want them to get in. I want as many Canadian teams in as possible. But still, I think St. Louis is playing too well at the minute. They're playing really well. So Montreal, they just need to take care of their business, take care of their own business. Don't focus on what the Rangers are doing. Don't focus on what the Islanders are doing. Just plug away, chip away. My Bruins are dead. They're done. That was horrendous. Over the weekend. San Jose, losing to San Jose alone is embarrassing. But then losing 7-2 to LA, I mean, that's the cherry on. That's it. That's the cherry on top. They're done. And they need, I don't know what the hell they're going to do in the offseason. I don't know if I trust Don Sweeney. I like that we got young prospects. We're trying to rebuild on the fly, but this is a horrible hockey team right now. Horrible. We look at those two games against Tampa and Florida, like, oh, maybe we're back. We just needed a little change of scenery. No, they stink. They just got annihilated by Ottawa, annihilated by Tampa Bay. You lose to Buffalo and San Jose in that stretch as well. Then you get pumped by Vegas and LA. It's just not a good scene right now in Boston. At least there's the Celtics, the Red Sox. Boston sports fans would be distracted, but it's not a good look right now in Boston. It's not. The Bruins really stink. And right now, it looks like Winnipeg's got the onesie locked up, which means we're going to get in Dallas and Colorado. I'm 90% sure we're getting that one as well. So you're going to have Winnipeg playing probably St. Louis, and then you're going to have Vegas play Minnesota, it looks like, even though they're playing well at the minute, and then you're going to have LA and Edmonton, it looks like, for the 100th year in a row. So I don't know what the hell's going to happen when those teams play each other, but the matchups, I'm really looking forward to Dallas, Colorado, St. Louis, Winnipeg, but am I looking forward to LA and Edmonton again? It's going to be good hockey, but like, geez, can we bring back the 1-8? 2-7, 3-6, 4-5. It's been every damn year we get LA and Edmonton in the first round because Vegas wins the Pacific, and then they're the two and the third best teams in the regular season, and here we are. LA, Edmonton again. Jeepers. Jeepers. Yeah, what I would do to get 1-8, 2-7, 3-6 back, I would just make it so much better. It really would. It would be Washington, Montreal. Okay, that would stay the same. But then you get Carolina, Ottawa, New Jersey and Florida, Toronto, Tampa. And then you look out west, you'd still get Winnipeg and St. Louis if you did 1-8-2-7. And then Dallas and Minnesota. And then finally, we don't get L.A. Edmonton. No, we would get Vegas, Edmonton, Colorado, L.A. Oh, something different. The amount of years we're going to L.A. I'm just done with L.A. Edmonton in the first round. It's getting annoying. L.A. Edmonton, every damn year. So the NHL right now, listen, it's up for those playoff spots. In the West, it looks like St. Louis is pulling away. And it hasn't helped that Vancouver and Calgary, I know they've won three in a row, Calgary, but still, they're just not doing themselves any favors. Like that performance against Toronto earlier last week was awful. And yes, they've responded with three wins in a row, but if a team's winning six, seven in a row, it's not a good spot right now. And I don't want to declare Vancouver dead, but Vancouver might be dead. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's Patterson. I don't know what the hell's happening there. They're Quinn Hughes-centric. They need tonight's game against New Jersey. They need it. If they don't get that, I'm declaring them dead. It's over. Over. So the NHL is really heating up. So right now, I have to think Montreal gets in. I'd go Ottawa, Montreal, and then I'm sorry, I'm sticking with Minnesota and St. Louis as the two wild cards in the West. Calgary, maybe. But right now, Vancouver, no. So Calgary and St. Louis, to me, battling for that last spot. And I still think the Rangers have a chance, but I'm taking Montreal. I am. I was impressed with them. This weekend, those two lost. They thoroughly outplayed the Islanders. Not even close. Sorokin stole the game away. And then they had the Avalanche on the ropes. They did. They were done. Going in down 4-1. Done. And they fought back. Dvorak scored a great goal. Slavkovsky scored two. It was a great game for Montreal. Just they didn't get the breaks in overtime in the shootout. And it says two losses in a row, but they played pretty darn well. They have. So I like where Montreal's at, and I really like where the Blues are at in the Western Conference. So there you go. That's my quick little take on what's happening in the NHL. Still a long way to go, if you think about it. I know it's less than a month, but 13 games left for Montreal. It's a boatload of games. Quickly to the NBA. The Cavs, like we mentioned before yesterday, had lost four in a row, which doesn't even seem possible how well they were playing. They still have a five-game lead in the West in the Eastern Conference over the Celtics. Then there's the huge drop-off to the Knicks, the Pacers, the Bucks, the Detroit Pistons, which is a great story. And in your play-in scenario, you're going to have the Hawks, Orlando, Chicago, the Heat. And then there's six games between the Heat and the Raptors. So maybe the Raptors can close the gap, but I'm not confident. So it looks like you're going to have Atlanta, Miami, Orlando, and Chicago as your play-in teams in the Eastern Conference. But if the Cavs keep slipping up like this, Boston's won five in a row, they're 9-1 in their last 10, maybe the one seed's not locked up. And it could be a blip. They're exhausted. They won all those games in a row in February and late January. Okay. But they got Portland tonight, then San Antonio and the Pistons. So it's a tough stretch coming up for the Cavs. After the San Antonio and Portland game. Detroit's not an easy out. Kawhi's finally healthy for the Clippers. The Knicks are, listen, they're just a tough team to play against. They'll play their starters 40 minutes. So they got a big stretch coming up after this. They do. I still think they hold on to the one seed five games. That's a lot of ground for the Celtics to make up. I don't know if the Cavs have five losses left. But they're not playing as well as they did earlier in the year. And we're heading into April. So the Cavs need to really wake up. Because if they play like this and they play the Celtics in a seven-game series, it's good luck winning. Good luck. OKC, they just keep winning ball games. They've won six in a row. They're the one seed. They have a 13.5-point lead on the Houston Rockets. Then it goes Denver and the Lakers, Memphis, Golden State. Listen, I still like Golden State. I think when Jimmy Butler and Steph are playing, and they're hard to beat. So right now they would play Denver, and that'd be a hell of a series. So we'll see what happens. The play-in, man, don't rule out Minnesota. They're 8-2 their last 10. They're coming on a bit. Maybe they catch Golden State. Who knows? But right now in the play-in, you got Minnesota, the Clippers, Sacramento, and Phoenix tied with Dallas for that last spot. I think Dallas is just so injured right now. It's unbelievable. Phoenix is not good either. I think the Suns get in. They have Durant. They have Booker. I think they'll get the last play-in spot. But none of those teams are doing anything. To me, it's Oklahoma City, Denver, LA, Golden State, Minnesota can win a championship. I don't even think Minnesota can win a championship, but they're playing very well at the minute. They're well constructed. I like Anthony Edwards. They got good surrounding pieces around him. They could be trouble. They went to the West Final last year. I'll put them in, but I'm not confident. But to me, the winner of the West is coming from OKC, Denver, LA, Golden State. Houston's a great story. Memphis, they're playing very well. The Clippers, Kawhi's healthy. I don't know. I just think those teams are just a step up from everyone else come postseason time. The SGA is winning the MVP. Oklahoma City is well constructed. Denver, they have the best player in the world in Jokic and good surrounding cast. The Lakers, they have the best 1-2 punch in the league with Luka and LeBron. Golden State, they have championship-level experience with Curry, with Draymond, with Steve Kerr as a head coach, and then you add a playoff gamer and Jimmy Butler to it. I think that's very tough to beat. So that's why I'm picking those teams, those four, versus the field. And I know that's a lot of teams. Like, four teams, only eight make the playoffs. Okay, you're right. But Houston's playing 640 basketball. They're 9-1 their last 10. Memphis is playing great. Minnesota's playing great. I just don't take them. I'm not. I don't trust Memphis. I don't. So that's where things stand in the NBA. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we have big news out of the NFL, and we're getting some clarity on what's happening for the NFL draft in what, I guess, a month's time now. It's right around a month away from the NFL draft. The Tennessee Titans are on the clock, and it looks like they have their number one pick sorted out. So we will get into that after the break. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Production Nuit d'Afrique invites you to discover new talent with its World Music Showcase, the 18th edition of City d'Or dans la musique du monde. Come discover 36 acts every Tuesday and Wednesday at Club Balatou until April 9th. Take part in the free showcase concerts and vote for your favorite artist. More info on Célidor.com, Facebook, and Instagram.
I say, what are you listening to there, old chap? Man, I'm listening to the Live Wire show on CGLO 1690 on your AM dial every Saturday from 9 till 10 in the morning.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. So let's see what happens down the stretch in the NBA and NHL. And Anthony Davis targeting a return. I don't know how much confidence he's going to have in. Was it his knee or his leg? He's had that injury before. He's missed 16 games in a row. And he was phenomenal in that first game with Dallas before he got hurt. But it's going to be tough. They need to win games down the stretch. And without Anthony Davis and without Kyrie Irving and just plenty of other injuries to the roster, it's going to be tough. It's going to be really tough. Canada with a big win over the U.S. in the bronze medal game. And was that the Nations Cup or Nations League, whatever. Mexico beat Panama. Canada beat the U.S. for the bronze. So that's a big win for Team Canada, and they're trending in the right direction for the World Cup next summer. Can't wait for that. So that's third place in the Nations League for Canada. Formula One, we'll quickly get into that. McLaren's got a rocket ship. Piastri, wins the race. Lewis Hamilton won the sprint. And then the actual Grand Prix, Piastri wins, Lando Norris second, George Russell third, Max Verstappen fourth, with the two Ferraris being disqualified. I think Lewis was like a weight issue with the car. Okay, we're back to our usual ways, Ferrari. You know, having a great car. We're great in the sprints when there's no strategy, but once strategy is involved in setting up a car, good Lord. Good Lord. Nuts. But that's the way it goes. We got Japan in 2 weeks. We'll see if Red Bull, Mercedes, or Ferrari can close the gap to McLaren, because right now those Piastri and Norris each have a win apiece, and they're going to be battling for that world championship. We're only two races in. But if you're Ferrari, you're already in a hole. And you won the sprint. Lewis drove great in the sprint. So there's still more in the car, for sure, but we're going to see. And then Verstappen, listen, he seems a bit frustrated, but don't rule him out as well. It's so early in the year. But as it looks right now, McLaren's just running away with the constructors, and they're going to have a nice little battle in their hands for the drivers between Lando and Piastri. So the NFL draft's in a month's time, 1 month away. And Tennessee's on the clock, and we were all kind of thrown off when their general manager was like, oh, well, we're taking a generational player at number one. We're taking a generational player over number one. And that kind of threw us all off, because there was not a generational quarterback in the draft. I'm sorry, Cam Ward. Sorry, Shador Sanders. Not generational. There's no Andrew Luck. There is no John Elway. There's no Peyton Manning in this draft class. There's not. Sorry. So when they said that, we all like, oh, they're going to take Travis Hunter. Oh, they're going to take Abdul Carter, the two generational talents in the draft. But now as we get closer and closer to the draft, it looks like they're shifting towards taking Cam Ward from Miami. And listen, I like Cam Ward. He was so fun to watch at Miami last year for the Hurricanes. He can make big-time throws. He's mobile. He's athletic. The real question is, though, is he going to be the quarterback you trust to go on the road in the Kansas City, to go on the road in the Buffalo, go on the road in the Baltimore and win you playoff games? I'm not sure. And he's talented. I think he'll play well. I don't know what the deal with Callahan as a coach. He was Burrow's offensive coordinator, okay, but he was gone last year and Burrow put up MVP numbers. So usually when you have a generational great quarterback like a Joe Burrow, like a Josh Allen, like a Patrick Mahomes, once you leave them, you haven't had great success. I know people are going to point out the one Brian Daboll year. Oh, look, he did to Daniel Jones. Yeah, but look what he did after. Same with Josh McDaniels. When Josh McDaniels left Tom Brady, everyone thought he would do the same with these quarterbacks. No, you know, once you leave Tom Brady, it's not as easy. And Josh McDaniels is a smart guy. He's a good OC. But at Callahan, I don't know, man. Like, it was just strange down the year. Like, Will Levis regressed to a level I didn't think we would see from him. And I'm not a huge Will Levis guy, and I wasn't a big little Will Levis guy coming out of Kentucky. But he played decent in his rookie year, bottom this year, and he regressed at an extreme level. So do I trust Callahan and Cam Ward? Listen, we'll see. I know why he has to take the quarterback. It's because if they have a bad year this year or they don't have a plan in place, he's going to be out. And they fired Mike Vrabel for this guy, because Vrabel's having a riff with the general manager and ownership and all these other things. Vrabel's out, who's one of the top 10 coaches in the league, took Ryan Tannehill to an AFC championship game with that defense. And now they bring in Callahan, who was woeful his first year, hence why they have the first pick in the draft. And they need to take a quarterback. And they're going to take Cam Ward, it looks like, and they're going to cross their fingers. He can make the big-time throws. He's used to putting up points because that Miami defense was horrible. He's not going to be flustered when he's down 21-0 or 14-0. But this is not the ACC, Cam. This is the National Football League. So, listen, if you think Cam Ward's the guy in Tennessee, then you got to take him. You got to take him. I don't care if he's not the prospect that Caleb Williams was or Drake May was or Jaden Daniels was last year. That's irrelevant. If they think he's going to be their quarterback for the next 5 to 10 years, then you got to take him if you're Tennessee. Here's where it gets interesting. What do the Browns do it to? because Tennessee's Cam Ward, 90% sure. The Browns have an interesting decision on their hands because I don't think they fire Stefanski after this year if it's bad. He's won two coach of the years. He's proven he can win with average quarterback play, and they just acquired Kenny Pickett. I can't believe I'm saying that, like that's going to make a difference, but they need a quarterback. But they also just signed Myles Garrett to a new four-year deal. Denzel Ward still under contract. They still got a lot of their good players under contract. If they don't love any of the quarterbacks, then you look at Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter. You take one of those two generational players. And I love the idea of having Abdul Carter opposite of Myles Garrett. That would just be unfair. And then by the time Garrett's near the end of his deal, you can let Garrett go if you want, or he'll take a reduced rate and you'll sign Abdul Carter. It's like just the passing of the torch. Or you take Travis Hunter because you're lacking just pure talent. He can play a wide receiver, could possibly play corner for you. That's an exciting option. Or do you take Shador Sanders or Jackson Dart? And that's going to be the interesting conversation, because then you got the Giants at three who are just praying Shador falls to them. I'm not. You signed Jameis Winston. That's great. Brian Daboll and Joe Shane are not tying their future to Jameis Winston. As fun as Jameis is, he'll put up a ton of numbers. Malik Nabers will be a fantasy god the first 4 weeks of the year. But there's no way in a make or break year for Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, they're gonna put it in the hands of Jameis Winston. They're not gonna do it. You sign Jameis to maybe start a few games earlier in the year until your rookie quarterback's ready to go. But the Giants, I'm sorry, they have to go quarterback. As much as they would love to have Travis Hunter, much as they love Abdul Carter, you need to take a quarterback. Here's where it gets interesting. Can the Giants try and trade back in and get a quarterback late first, maybe second round? Possibly, but I don't see that. There's no way in hell Daboll and Shane are taking a second round quarterback to bail them out. No. To me, they are praying Abdul Carter goes two, or Travis Hunter goes two, because they want Shador Sanders. And theoretically, if they love Jackson Dart, you can stick and pick Jackson Dart at three and not even worry about it. But I just don't see that. I don't know. I mean, Jackson Dart was a third-round pick at the bowl game with Ole Miss in January, and then he hasn't thrown a damn pass since then, except in, what, the Senior Bowl, and now he's going to be a top-10 pick. So it's into the Giants are taking a quarterback. It would make no sense, for unless they want to get fired, for Daboll and Shane to bring Jameis Winston as the answer for the Giants. It's not going to work. He's going to put up big numbers and lose. So they need to take a quarterback, and just the vibe I'm getting from the Giants, they would take Shador Sanders over Jackson Dart. But the real question in this draft is, what do the Browns do? And that ultimately affects the rest of the draft, because you have the Patriots sitting there at four just wanting either Carter or Hunter. So the Browns really control the draft. Tennessee's going to go Cam Ward, and then the draft starts at two. And the Giants are praying they take Carter or Hunter, because Jackson Dart at three, to me, seems like an overdraft. And the Giants have to do it, don't get me wrong. But they are praying the Browns go Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter. Because Shador Sanders, I like Shador Sanders a lot. I watched I think every single game of him at Colorado. I was in on the Deion hype. I wanted to watch Travis Hunter. I wanted to watch Shador Sanders. And trust me, he did not have a crazy offensive line. In fact, he had a crazy bad offensive line. He's used to people being around his feet, in his face, making big-time throws. He's a clutch athlete. Remember that game against Baylor, the Hail Mary? I remember the game against Colorado State 2 years ago. He went 90-something yards. He's a clutch player. So if he's there at three, the Giants are going to take him. The real question is, does Stefanski like Shador, and they take him at two, and then will the Giants have to settle for Jackson Dart? That is the big question. And then my Patriots are sitting there at four just saying, please let two quarterbacks go so we get Carter or Hunter. That's it. And then after that, it's kind of a mid-draft. Mason Graham's okay. I like Will Johnson, the corner from Michigan. I like Malachi Stark. I like the few of the Georgia guys. But to me, the top four is going to be interesting. We know we have one of the answers, Cam Ward, number one. But where's Shadur going to go? Where's Carter going to go? Where's Hunter going to go? Those are your big questions a month out from the draft. Thank you guys for listening. We're back next Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, right here on CJLO 1690 a.m. here in Montreal. My name is Tommy Lane. Thank you guys for listening, and I will speak to you all next week.
Hello.